Hey friends, and welcome back to Hell Simple Radio. This is episode number 69. We are joined today with Matt Maruca, who has been on this podcast before, episode number 54, where we talked all about the light diet, about how important sunlight is for human health. And it was a mind-blowing episode. It's actually the number one most listened episode on Hell Simple Radio all time. If you haven't listened to it yet, go check that out. It is part one of this series here, I guess, of episodes with Matt, but it is pretty amazing. This second one, we talk kind of more application of things that you can do to improve your health using sunlight and how this applies to weight loss as well. If you guys, when you listen to this podcast, you're going to learn all about blue light and what this does and how this impacts our health at night, okay? And so if you want to help get rid of blue light, then look no further than wearing blue light blocking glasses. This is Raw Optics, the company that Matt started as well. They make amazing looking blue light blocking glasses. So they're not as the nerdy ones that you may be seeing out there. He's got really good styled frames. He's got daytime and nighttime. I wear them every single night and I swear by it. I think it's one of the best things you can do. So if you want to pick up a pair, you can get 10% off. You just go to rawoptics.com. But if you use the code Kyle10, you get 10% off your purchase of as many glasses as you would like. You're going to learn all about why this is important if you do not know just yet. But again, I highly recommend getting a pair of these and putting them on every single night once the sun goes down. It is going to make such a big difference for your sleep and overall health. Anyway, guys, this is an awesome episode. Every time I talk to him, I learn so much information. So guys, just enjoy this episode and the information that he's sharing. Hey friends, and welcome back to Hell Simple Radio. I am joined again by Mr. Matt Maruca.
Third time today.
We've been trying, and our internet's just not working out here. I'm in Bali. He's in Bosnia. We'll talk about why in just a second. But Matt was on this podcast back in episode number 54. It's actually my second most listened podcast of all time.
Should be number one, guys. Go watch it.
Actually, if you haven't listened to it yet, you probably want to go check it out. We go deep into, well, we're going to talk about sunlight. But Matt is this incredibly smart and cool dude that I met here in Bali. He started a company called The Light Diet, another one called Raw Optics, where they sell blue light blocking glasses that are badass. So check those out. But Matt, what are you doing in Bosnia? Let's start there.
Yeah, so I lived here for about a year when I was 16 years old on a government exchange program, and I love it. Of all the places I've been, Mexico, Bosnia, Bali, Bosnia is my favorite. It's very beautiful, and the nature is amazing. The food's unbelievable. The people are beautiful, which leads me to believe that the environment's very healthy because it leads to very healthy physically and mentally people. So I've been traveling the last 2 years. You know, I was in Bali with you, and I decided I need some time to just ground. So I'm kind of back here where I first had my initial healing, my first application of the light diet protocols when I had learned about them about 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm also just killing time for all of September until I go to the Health Optimization Summit in London to speak. That's the main reason, is I need somewhere to be in Europe for a month and a half before then. And so this is like my home.
Just a cool spot. Now, if anyone's watching the video right now, last time I interviewed him, he was bald as can be. If you're checking out Matt now, he's got some crazy surfer blonde flow. He's growing it back out, I guess. In case you just start looking, you're like, I don't even recognize this dude. It's still him. It's the same guy.
Same guy.
Matt, let's start here then. You know, first of all, anyone who's listening, if you want to learn like really in depth about the light diet, go listen to episode number 54 on Health Simple Radio, because we go deep. But why don't you give us a summary of like what the heck the light diet even is?
Absolutely. So all life on Earth is powered by the light of the sun. And you can think about this by asking yourself the question, what would happen tomorrow if the sun didn't come up? And if it didn't come up again? It would be, obviously, photosynthesis would stop, so the bottom of the food chain would die very quickly. And then, of course, we would all freeze to death first. But, you know, if we didn't freeze to death first, then all photosynthesis would stop. And then the animals that we eat or the plants that we eat wouldn't be able to exist, and we would die by proxy. So essentially, all food at the end of the day, the energy that it is, you know, the thing that makes you could eat dirt theoretically, but it's not going to do much for you. But the reason food is because it contains energy, and the energy in food is in the form of excited electrons. And the reason they're excited is because of sunlight. So in my journey, and again, we detailed this deep in episode 54, I was trying to solve biologic issues in my body using diet alone as a strategy. And I basically learned that that doesn't work because we're beings of light driven by light. And so if we're trying to fix our body with food alone, it doesn't go to the root of the issue, which is in modern world, it's dysfunction of our engines. So for example, people can think about 500 years ago, or even just our grandmother and grandparents' generations, they didn't eat paleo diets. They ate grains, they ate dairy, they ate legumes. They even ate some refined sugar, not nearly as much, but they didn't have all these diseases, even though they were eating grains, they were eating this stuff. Now though, 50 years later, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, obesity have absolutely skyrocketed. So if the paleo diet was right, then our grandparents who were eating grains also should have had crazy rates of disease, but they're missing the whole explanation. The reason these diets are skyrocketing isn't because of sugar, isn't because of refined seed oils, which were, you know, their consumption sugar consumption spiked tremendously, but it hasn't been increasing more and more and more. It's sort of leveling off, whereas these diseases are exponentially increasing day by day, even as more and more people go on healthy diets. That's the kicker. So the light diet is the first diet in the modern world that's addressing these diseases by looking at the root issues, which is dysfunction of our engines, of our mitochondria. That's like the brief cliff notes.
Well, explain a little bit about what this does to our mitochondria. Let's talk a little bit about that so that we have a better understanding of what exactly is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's happening when we're living in the modern world is that we're exposed to all kinds of things that our biology never adapted to. For example, for about 4 billion years, all of evolution, especially as life came from the bottoms of the ocean to the surface, when we began to be exposed to light, every living organism, and now even the ones at the bottom of the ocean, they express some level of what we call a circadian rhythm. A circadian rhythm is a fancy term for a daily rhythm in our body. So for example, circa in Latin means approximately, dies means one day, right? So the circadian rhythm means the rhythm that is approximately the length of a day. And it's just like any other rhythm. For example, the rhythm of the earth spinning around the sun, it's 365 days, or the rhythm of a beat on a song, boom, boom, boom. Our circadian rhythm is a boom, boom, boom that hits every 24 hours. And the thing is that every single life form essentially on Earth today has some form of this daily rhythm. And this was really astounding to researchers when they learned about it. Now to hear it, it's like, oh, obviously, because we need to be timed up with the days, right? But we should kind of look in a little deeper and see what does that really imply for us, and why would every single organism have this rhythm? The reason is because our existence is fundamentally tied to the environmental factors on Earth. So for example, when we're in the sun and we have the energy of the sun, it's affecting us in a certain way where we're getting the light from the sun. It's powering our biology. For example, plants, they're engaging in photosynthesis during this time. Animals need to be up and active and moving to gather nutrients and so on. And then at night is when we go to sleep and we regenerate. And plants exhibit similar things, like maybe they close up their leaves. They're not, you know, ready in the mode to absorb sunlight. They're also regenerating to some extent. At night, the Earth's magnetic field is stronger, so life, at least animals like we are, use this to regenerate. So this is something that life has evolved with for like a really long time, Kyle, as you know. And all of our functions are tied to it. So the secretion of our hormones, I mean, the biggest being wake and sleep. Sometimes it's interesting, like people take for granted the fact that everyone is awake when the sun is out and everyone is asleep when it's dark. Like really, if you think about it, it's like it's we're so used to it. It's like, duh, why would it be any other way? But like, ask yourself, like, why? Like, why are we awake when the sun is out? And why are we sleeping when it's dark? And what would happen if we flip? Like, could there be a consequence if we reverse that? And the answer is yes. The consequence would be basically our existence, because we're designed to be, we're every hormone, every secretion of every hormone, all of our regeneration is driven, all the timing of everything in our biology is driven by the inclining light in the morning from the time when it's dark to getting light. And we're designed to be living outdoors, like in teepees or on the ground or in the trees or wherever, where we wouldn't be able to not be exposed to that. It's kind of like being in like a nuclear power plant explosion town like Chernobyl. Like, you can't avoid the radiation in Chernobyl unless you build a lead cage around yourself, right? So like, life on Earth is designed to be outside. So like, if you're outside, when the light comes up in the morning, like, you can't avoid it. Even if you're in a teepee or in a cave, like, it's still coming in unless you're completely enclosed in the dark. So now that we've built, basically the core of the matter is, now that we've built these caves that have windows that don't let in the full spectrum of light, a human today can literally, the first animal ever to be able to, well, not the first ever, but the first, you know, mammal on Earth that isn't living down at the depths of the ocean, that can be away from the proper frequencies of light that all of our hormones evolve to. So what happens when we eliminate that, the light from our day, is that we basically lose the function of our timing in our body, which times everything. And so slowly our processes unravel and fall apart. And for example, you could see things like, the first thing that comes to mind is like early onset puberty in children. People have constantly increased exposure to certain frequencies that are found in our artificial lights, which drive growth, and development. And never, they're getting the darkness signal, which kind of is the negative feedback loop, which the negative feedback control, which stops that growth signal. And the same thing goes to the next extent for cancer. Like, cells aren't designed to grow forever. But if we're living in a light environment that's constantly signaling growth, and so on, and the secretion of the hormones and everything that supports that, then we can eventually end up with cells that are cancerous that grow forever. So the light diet is basically the diet to solve the modern disconnect from the way we're designed to live, by kind of getting back in sync with the natural daily circadian rhythm. And it's simple. It literally just means living outdoors all the time. The only time we're supposed to be really indoors is like when we're sleeping at night. And yeah. And even then, I set an alarm every morning because my circadian rhythm's been off from my traveling. And it takes a couple weeks for me now after all this time to get it properly reset, where I don't need an alarm in the morning. But even then, I set an alarm for 4:30 in the morning. So I open up all the windows and the blinds because I have them blacked out at night, so that I can let that light wake me up. And you might think, oh, having the sleep disrupted by an alarm, that must be worse. But actually, it's way worse to not be getting those full signals. So I'll set an alarm every day at 4:35, or, you know, it'll get later and later as the winter comes, so that I can just open up all the blinds so that I can get naturally woken up. Because otherwise, if I leave it black or I leave the windows shut, then I might be sleeping in later, which is not optimal. You know, I want to be getting all those signals. So that's basically how the light diet works.
You brought up a lot of points that I want to talk about. First, you know, the beautiful thing about living outdoors, I've seen this the past 7 months I've been living in Bali, because if you can see behind me right now, if you're watching the video, I basically live outdoors. I have a room, but like my kitchen, my family room, everything is all outside. It's covered, but I'm basically always seeing sun, and I've never felt better, never worked at a higher level, and felt and trained at a higher level in my life. And really, I haven't changed a whole lot, except for the fact that I'm outdoors all the time and I'm living outside. It's an amazing thing.
That's the key.
It is. So there's a few things. One, I want to talk a lot about weight loss in this. So when you talked about the growth aspect of cells, I see a connection there. But before we get into that, I want to talk about how our body actually absorbs the sunlight. You talked about, if we're, you know, we're indoors, we're blocking that sunlight. What else are we doing to block the sunlight? Like, how do we absorb it, and what can we do to get more?
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're doing to block it is, well, that's the whole light diet. The whole light diet is about how to basically improve our ability to assimilate light and then to get more light. So the basic steps, I'll walk through them. and they all link together. But step one of the light diet is to wake up every morning and watch the sunrise. And ideally, this means we set an alarm. Again, in the beginning, you'd have to set an alarm. But after time, especially if you're living in one location, you're not traveling and so on, you'll really, this rhythm will set itself very quickly. So you wake up, I'd say set an alarm for 30 minutes before sunrise. That's my preference. And go outside when it's still slightly dark almost. And to me, this is the most peaceful time of the day. I actually meditate at this time because once the sun's up, for me, meditation is very challenging because the fire, the pitta energy, as the ancient Ayurvedic doctors call it, is active. And I just find it hard to really calm at that time of the day. So we get up and we let this light turn on all our hormones. Then step two of the light diet would be to, well, actually, yeah, step two would be to live outdoors during the day. So again, these two steps are more related to just letting more light in. But the key thing is that the morning sunlight is more of a time setter. So you want to literally be, you know, watching the light from the time it's coming up. And if you're near an ocean, a lake, any sort of horizon, it's best because you can see it come over the horizon. Even if you need to get up on a roof or a hill or the second story of a building, you can look directly at the sun for the first 15 to 20 minutes. And that's like the ultimate time setting. Think of it like a laser directly on your brain, like time to wake up, right? And then the other part of that is every morning, especially when someone's starting, you want to eat a high protein. Ideally, to really optimize this in the modern world, it's really good to eat a high protein breakfast. If you're just starting for 4 to 6 weeks every day within about 30 minutes of the time the sun comes up. So you look at it for about 30 minutes between, you know, you don't have to look right at it, but you just be out letting it hit your eyes and your skin. You eat a big breakfast, and the big breakfast besides the light is the second strongest thing to reinforce a circadian rhythm. Now, I realize that a lot of people are doing fasting for weight loss. So this is something that people would have to make a choice on. But based on what I've learned, I would recommend that people do their fasting in the evening hours, because the amount of research now that's shown that eating any time past 4 or 5 p.m., you know, within 4 hours of sleep, is really detrimental to our sleep because we're still digesting. So not only do we not digest as well, we don't sleep as well, and we're constantly disrupting our circadian rhythm. So for me, for example, if I eat after 5 p.m., waking up at 4 or 5 in the morning is very challenging. If I eat my last meal around 2 or 3, then I can wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning and feel really much more energized. So it's super interesting. So again, for fasters, I recommend fasting in the evening. It's much better for our sleep and for our biology. And check out this guy, Dr. Kruse, a mentor of mine. He has a protocol called the leptin reset, which is basically step one, watch the sunrise and then eat this big protein breakfast. And he has had tremendous success with himself and others losing weight just by optimizing this rhythm. People can also look into a guy named Dr. Sachin Panda, who's this circadian rhythm researcher who you might even want to get on the show. And he talks about how animals who eat healthy food, but they eat it at all times throughout the day, end up having more weight gain and more problems than animals that eat bad food, but eat it within an 8-hour condensed window or even a 12-hour condensed window. So that's a really interesting study that he was finding. So the implications of this, just the timing, are huge. So that's basically step one. Step two is basically sunbathe every day, especially in the summer, and build up your tolerance. You know, don't burn yourself, but build up your tolerance day to day, maybe 5-10 minutes one day, building up, maybe take a break, keep building it up. And even when you're not sunbathing in direct sunlight, go in the shade, but be like you are, Kyle, like out. So that's about assimilating more light. Now we're getting into the things that allow us to actually absorb more light. So the next step, step three in the light diet, is to basically drink unfluoridated spring water. So obviously plastic isn't optimal. Like if you can get your water directly from a spring or in glass jugs, if you can afford it, that's great. Being on the road, it's a little harder for me here, but still I'm not that concerned about the risks because the detox is improved when we get all this light. So, you know, if you have any questions, interject, of course. So the water, what it does is it essentially allows our cells to contain more light when we're drinking good quality water. See, the issue with fluoridated water and chlorinated water is that they have the chemicals fluoride and chloride, they reduce the ability of water to store light energy. So if you're drinking city tap water, municipal tap water, which I recommend to be avoided completely, your body, your cells can't actually store as much light energy. And it turns out that that's actually how our biology works, is by storing light energy in water. And then the water basically hugs all of our proteins and touches everything, and it basically carries electricity through this. People could look into a guy named Gerald Pollack and the fourth phase of water. And he, it's basically the new science of water, the most advanced research on water, that water can actually act as a battery to store energy in certain circumstances. This is why, for example, you can think about the oceans take months to get warmer. Like the strongest sun is in June. The oceans, for example, in the Northern Hemisphere aren't their warmest until maybe August. Mm. So it takes, so the water can store so much energy, and it does in our cells. So that's huge. The, you know, just good water to get the light in. Again, also huge is eating tons of seafood. I think we might have gone through this before, but we want to have the DHA, the omega-3 in our skin, and not from the pill form. We want to have it from seafood, because it's the only fatty acid that is used to allow us to assimilate more light. The most interesting thing about this is that the research shows that the reason humans evolved from apes, and this is a common misconception, I think, in the paleo diet world and the carnivore diet world, people make the claim that the reason humans evolved from other animals, from apes, is because we had access to lots of organ meats like liver, kidney, brains. If you think about wolves or lions or hyenas or things like, I'm not sure about hyenas, but certain animals like these that are carnivores, they eat primarily organ meats, but their brains aren't growing. The reason the human brain grew is because, based on all the archaeological evidence too of our tribal ancestors, they were coastal, the ones that left the savannas, they moved to the coast, and these are where the humans evolved. Like Lucy, the Australopithecus afarensis, was in a coastal region, the skeleton they found. The majority of the missing links, you know, some people claim that humans couldn't have evolved from apes because there's no fossil record. The reason the fossil record isn't there is because bones disintegrate in salt water. So it was a coastal region, and the oceans shifting, and these regions are now completely underwater. But they have found massive caves and settlements full of shells of shellfish that were pretty clearly cooked and eaten. So this is where the human brain, and we have more DHA, omega-3, in our brain than any other animal. And it's particularly, it's in our eyes, it's in our skin, it's in our, and in the myelin sheathing, which is what allows our nerves to conduct electricity. So this is why we were able to evolve the advanced human brain. So far we've got setting the rhythm, then absorbing more light, and particularly we want to be drinking the good water that can hold the light and eating the seafood that can let it come in. Again, another really cool step is cold exposure. That's step 4. Get cold, because when you cool your skin, if you've ever been to a beach and you're really hot, what do first? You go in the water so that you can then lay out in the sun. When we cool our surfaces, we can allow them to absorb more light. It's kind of like, if you think about your cell phone, if it gets too hot, the semiconductor chip can't conduct the electrons anymore. It just slows down and basically shuts off because it's overheating. The same thing in our body. If we have too much heat on our surfaces or on any of our semiconductors, because all of our proteins are essentially, they work through some conduction very similar to semiconduction, then they can no longer basically assimilate light if they're too hot. So we cool them, and then we can continue to pump in energy that can be stored in our water battery. So this morning I was just in the very cold mountain river in this town. It's called Vrbas. And then I was basically going in the sun, and then in the river again, then in the sun. And so I'm charged and energized. Step 4, that's it. Step 5 is to avoid non-native man-made electromagnetic frequencies, which means Bluetooth, Wi-Fi. These are things that are artificial forms of light that actually drain us by creating a stress on our body, like the Wi-Fi that I'm using right now to do this podcast. You know, a little bit you can mitigate, but ultimately in the long term, too much of this stuff, there's tons of research on it, which we could get into if you want to dig into that one, either in a separate episode or later in this episode. And then step 6 of the light diet essentially is to watch the sunset, and then to live in darkness or wear blue blockers at night, and then sleep a full night, which means going to sleep between 9 and 10 p.m. at the latest every night. You know, maybe once, twice a week max if you're healthy. You know, if you want to maintain optimal health and you're healthy already, 1 to 2 nights per week, you can stay up late, do whatever you want. For me, I found, because of all my traveling and sort of working on recovery now, I can't even tolerate 1 or 2 nights up late. Like, I'm just not partying, not doing any of that stuff, even though I'm 19 still. It's like, I've been doing what I'm doing for my business, traveling and all this stuff, and I know what my body needs. I'm listening now, finally, after all this time. It's like, just take it easy, don't drink. So I'm in a sort of recovery mode. And then the step seven of the light diet, which is, again, a thing we can talk about later on if you're interested in it, is cultivating your inner light. And this, to me, means, what I mean by this is, first and foremost, having a really strong community, which is something I'm personally working on after having left high school, traveled the world, and now looking to settle a base. The other great things are, for example, reading good books, pursuing things you're passionate about, practicing Qigong or some kind of meditation. These are
basically finding ways to limit stress.
Absolutely. That, yeah. So anytime we're stressed, we're leaking light. That's what some research has shown, that when our cells are in a stressed mode, we basically leak ultraviolet light. Our cells lose their ability to hold it. So if we're stressed constantly, then we just can't keep our light. So these basically, that's the whole light diet answer to how do we bring in more light. And if we're not doing these things, which our human ancestors or ancestors who evolved to become humans were doing, then we're not optimizing ourselves to be optimal humans. And that's the core of it.
And you know what? You can find, if people are like, yeah, but does it really matter? I mean, the first thing and the easiest thing to look at is just look at people that work the night shift, people that are working at night. There's so much research to show how unhealthy these are, what this can cause later on in life, like the problems that are associated with just working the night shift.
High rates of every single disease, literally every disease, cancer, obesity, diabetes, heart disease, stress, depression, suicide, pretty much higher across all.
So that itself just shows you how important this is. But what's funny, as I hear you list the seven things, if you think about what has changed drastically in the past, let's say 30, 40 years, it's literally all this. Our water, right? Sleeping in now, we all sleep in late. We don't go to bed early because we're on our phones. We're always getting blue light because we're on our phones and laptops and watching TV. We're not outside anymore because we work in offices. We wear sunscreen. We wear sunglasses. It's literally, we are slowly evolving into everything that you're not, that basically the opposite of what you're suggesting. So you're really saying we've got to get back to like being human, right? Being a real human and not doing what we're doing now.
Yeah, it's super interesting. One thing that I found is that Ayurveda, this ancient Indian practice for optimal health, is very, very powerful from my experience. While I was in Bali actually surfing, I met a guy named Balarama, a really amazing Ayurvedic doctor, who gave me a protocol to start working with. The thing is that I've met a lot of people who are members, for example, fans of Dr. Jack Kruse, who's one of the main mentors of my own, and they tried Ayurveda. They tried everything, and they didn't get better. So the interesting thing that got me thinking about is that when the ancient scriptures or texts were written about Ayurveda, did they have blue light? Did they have cell phones? Did they have glass windows that could block ultraviolet light? No, they couldn't have anticipated that. So there's no way that these old texts, if someone's going by the book, could possibly have anticipated what the modern world would be facing. So the thing is, these people who had these experiences, they basically learned from a Western guy, Dr. Kruse, who saw these pieces in relation to the modern science and the ancient science within the context of the modern world, and developed a protocol, which I've now basically taken and summarized in the light diet in a way that people can easily digest. And they did this, they got better. And then once they were better, then they could apply Ayurveda and get even better. So this to me is really the money. This is where the magic's at, is that we have to basically get back to that foundation. Like the light diet isn't something, just like you said, it isn't something that's bringing people to some different place than where we've been before. It's actually just a protocol to remove the contradictions that we've introduced in our modern lifestyle. Like, so again, we wouldn't be able to have escaped the morning incline in light before having our own built up houses. We wouldn't have been able to not be outdoors during the day. And naturally, as an animal, like, my mom sends me pictures of my cat every day bathing in the morning sun. She's like, he's waiting for me to come join him. Like, it's so obvious, literally, that we would be in the sun when we liked it, and then we would go in the shade when we didn't. And that was it. And if it was like, if we had a river, we'd probably be in the river a lot. And, or if, like, surfers, like, they've just figured out that if you go in the water on a board, you can stay in the water all day and have fun and you feel amazing. You get, like, addicted, literally, you get this high. Same thing with the seafood. I mean, when we were the first human, I mean, the coolest thing to me about the light diet too, Kyle, is that it not only brings us back to, like, where we were just at our grandparents' time or even before that, the last couple hundred years, but it can even bring us back to the first human evolution before 10,000 years ago, before we started cultivating grains as our main food source. Mm-hmm. Now, do I think people can eat grains and still have optimal health? Definitely, based on what I've learned. Do I think people in the modern world whose bodies are really beat down can? Not as likely, unless you really get to an optimal state. And even then, I think it's suboptimal. But the thing is that the ancestors that evolved, again, from apes into humans, they were eating tons of seafood. So we can, I think, not just get back to optimal health, but potentially even evolve further to some extent by applying these protocols. It's the same thing with cold water. Like, if you were around cold water, you would just jump in and have fun like dogs do anytime they get next to a river. It's like a no-brainer. EMF is, like, obvious. That one was not around. And same thing with the sunset, darkness at night. You just couldn't avoid that. Fire doesn't have blue light, almost any at all. So it's super, you know, the only blue light in nature is, for example, a lightning bolt or the moon or the stars. And to give an idea, the light intensity of the moon at night is 0.03 to a half of one lux. One lux is a unit of light intensity, which is equivalent to about one candle at night. The bright summer sun is between 50,000 and 100,000 lux in the middle of the day. So to give that's how tremendous the difference is between the light of the day and the light at night. It's almost something we don't perceive because our eyes adjust, but it's literally 50,000 to 100,000 times stronger than the light of a candle. Now at night with artificial lights, these lights are anywhere in the range of 25 lux to a couple hundred lux. So even though they're almost nowhere near as strong as the sun, so they don't create as acute circadian disruption, we're designed to have basically nothing stronger than one lux at night, like the light of maybe a candle or a fire, a couple of lux. So we now have hundreds of that at night, and so it's really creating a chronic disruption. And that's you hit it right on the head.
You know what? I've been, so since we had our last podcast and since you were here in Bali, everyone I talk to them about sunlight. Even in my course, I have weight loss course that's out. I have a lesson that's strictly for sunlight. It's all I talk about. Circadian rhythm, I talk about sunlight. And my clients, my students, it's probably the only weight loss course where it talks about sunlight, which is awesome. But
dude, huge.
Yeah, I always... Huge. My clients are always concerned because they say, you know what? It makes sense. I get it. It makes sense that maybe we should have some more sunlight and we're kind of controlled by sunlight. But I always get a few questions. One is about the cancer studies, which you sort of touched on in the last.
We'll touch on them now too.
Yeah, I wanted to go on that again. And then the next question I want to ask, is there anyone that really shouldn't be focusing on getting more sunlight? Is there anyone that this is like a contraindication for? Like, let's talk about, you know, some of my clients are like, oh, I've had like cancerous spots on my skin before. Should I not be getting sun? What's your answer to those questions?
They need more sun than anyone else. The reason they have those cancerous spots is because they're lacking sunlight. I have an aunt who got skin cancer. And so, like, I think I just was at a family reunion with this side of the family, and I haven't seen some of them in many years. And I think they know a little bit about what I've been doing, but not very much. But, you know, because they weren't really asking me questions, and I kind of got a weird energy where I assumed that they thought they knew what I was all about. You know, like, they maybe saw a video or heard a podcast and they jumped to some conclusion like, oh yeah, he's totally crazy, you know? So only one or two of them even asked the question like about what I'm doing. And even then it was with a lot of skepticism, you know, like in the way they were phrasing it. But so this one aunt of mine had skin cancer. And so that, you know, she You know, and so they think it's the sun. They think it was all the sun she got when she was a child. But she didn't get the skin cancer when she was a child. And it's not like the effects are lingering over your lifetime. It's what you're doing at that time in your life, your status at that time, which is leading you to get the diseases you get. It isn't about the stuff from when you were a kid. It's about where you are at that time when the disease is happening. So it's kind of like blaming the way I'm feeling today on an interaction I had with someone like 10 years ago. Like, oh, you know, that... Okay, sure, if you didn't deal with something, it can, but that's not necessarily the best analogy. The point is that this particular person in my family looks like the ghost of Christmas past, like literally the whitest, palest, skinniest, very not healthy looking person. And so she's saying that they think that her cancer came from the sun. She looks like she hasn't seen the sun in 50 years. So there's no way she got the cancer from the sun. And it was even known back in time, like way back 50 years ago, that fluorescent bulbs actually led to cancer. Someone who worked inside their whole life, like this family member, that's what causes skin cancer. Sunlight is actually what optimizes our mitochondrial function via the blood. So the blood is like, basically the way this works is, in addition to the light powering up the water in our cells directly, it also powers our blood and charges up our blood. And there's these molecules in our blood, particularly red blood cells. They're not molecules, but they're cells made of millions of molecules. And they have these pigments on them called porphyrins, which are designed to absorb light. And then the blood, which brings oxygen along to our cells, also brings light along with the oxygen to our cells and to our mitochondria in particular, again, where they also bring oxygen so that we can... you know, live and breathe and exist. So I actually have a really great book that I think everyone listening to this should pick up. It's called Light, Medicine of the Future. Did I leave that with you by chance? No, I left that with another friend and he's supposed to give it to you. So ooh, maybe I'll see you.
Sweet.
But he's not in Bali right now, so he'll be back. And I know, it's such a good book. So basically, I'm going to pull up a little passage on the studies. Yes, too much UV light is bad. Now there's some studies regarding the, here we go. I'm actually going to just basically go through this. I just got the most information I've gotten about light from this book. So basically what they did, I'll read this passage actually. This guy, his name's Jacob Lieberman. He's one of the leading experts. I'm not sure if he's still alive. He wrote this book in 91. So the title is UV Studies That Created a Climate of Fear. And this is just a paragraph on one of them. In 1981, a study was conducted at the Medical College of Virginia in Richmond, the conclusions of which have always seemed questionable to me. Monkeys were tranquilized, then their eyelids were pried open with lid clamps. With the monkeys' pupils fully dilated, researchers beamed light into their eyes from a 2,500-watt xenon lamp for 16 minutes. The intense light contained high levels of UV radiation. Isn't this abusive, first of all? Although the results of the study showed that there was some retinal damage, it's hard for me to imagine that the researchers could have concluded anything else. This is a really strong light, by the way. Mm-hmm. Like very strong. 2,500-watt xenon bulb right in your eyes for 16 minutes. It's terrible. So they gave these monkeys a highly abnormal exposure to ultraviolet light that would never happen in real life. In real life, monkeys' pupils and eyelids would naturally adjust to protect their eyes, just like the pupils and eyelids of humans do. So then that's basically one of the main studies that has been used to say that light is damaging to our eyes and we should wear sunglasses. Like one of basically two or three that I'm going to basically describe next. So another argument science makes against ultraviolet light is that it causes cataracts. The same kinds of studies on laboratory animals concluding that UV light causes retinal damage are frequently used to conclude that UV light also causes cataracts. Of course, the eyes in these studies were damaged. Did they expect the vision to improve? In similar studies in which the skin of animals is repeatedly burned with high levels of UV light also have been done to quote, prove that ultraviolet light causes skin cancer. Why are these scientists suggesting that ultraviolet radiation causes cancer and cataracts? Their research, which is frequently inhumane, leads to but one conclusion. The abuse of animals in their studies causes cancer, blindness, and death. So, you know, basically... you get the idea. Like these are the studies that literally have been used to show that sunlight causes skin cancer. Mm. Abusive amounts of light being like beamed into eyes that were held open, and abusive amounts of light that wouldn't even be what we would normally be exposed to in nature, nor balanced with the rest of the solar spectrum in a certain context. These are what they claim, you know, causes skin cancer. So it's really complete. It's a joke at the end of the day, absolutely, to be honest.
And I think one thing to understand too is that we're not saying get outside and go get burnt to the max. Like, don't just stand outside for 8 hours in the middle of the sun with no shade. Like, obviously that doesn't make sense. There's a lot of issues that can happen with that. You want to build up what you call a solar callus. Can you sort of talk about that? That's always the next question I get is, how do I build up my solar callus? So explain what that is, and then talk about how we can do that.
Absolutely. So one has to be following all the steps of the light diet. You have to be getting up in the morning at sunrise and preconditioning the skin with the morning light. Think of it like this. Like, if you, I'm going to come up with a new analogy right now. Like, if you were to go into a hot bath, for example, like a really hot bath, like a Japanese bath, you know, and you were to just jump right in, and I'm talking one of the ones that is so hot that it literally could burn you. But what you do is you go in and you slowly get in and you put the water on your back and everything. But if you get in really fast, like, you could actually scald yourself. Or, for example, another better analogy might be if you're using your tap, you know, the hot water, and you turn the hot water all the way to the max, and then you put your hands in to wash your dishes, you're going to burn your hands probably. Whereas if you build it up slowly, like, it's not going to be an issue. So sort of what the analogy is trying to point out is, when we get morning sunlight on our skin, like the early hours, which, again, as wild animals without clothes, without sunglasses or any of this stuff, or glasses or contacts especially, but sunglasses and contacts especially, glasses too, we would not be able to avoid that morning light from stimulating our cells on our skin. So they basically, they're turned on, they're prepared, so that when you get hit by that stronger light later, the cells have been activated. Whereas if you just have your skin covered all day and then you go out in the middle of the day to tan, your cells haven't even been turned on yet or anything. They haven't really been, let's say, activated. The water in the cells hasn't been structured like more that day so that it could then absorb more ultraviolet light. Again, that book, The Fourth Phase of Water, highly recommended, because he very nicely details how water is first. It gets this cool fourth phase of water, liquid crystalline structure, when it's exposed to red and infrared light, which is what's found more in the morning sun. And then once it's structured, then it can absorb a tremendously larger amount of ultraviolet light, but only after it's been structured. So again, the water in our cells is sort of continuously being structured by the infrared light released by our own mitochondria. But when we go out in the sun in the morning, it furthers this effect, and then we can handle the light better. So that's a simple explanation. That's something I'm going to be researching more. We can do another episode and I can even dig into more on that, specifically that piece. But the morning sun's critical. You want to be, again, drinking the good water, so you have good water in your cells, and eating a lot of seafood, DHA. Again, if you're concerned about mercury or you're really unhealthy, maybe start with sardines, mackerel, anchovies, bottom smaller fish, maybe wild caught salmon, this kind of thing. And don't go for the tuna, the shark, swordfish, the stuff that'll have more mercury and more toxins, because it's higher on the food chain. If you're concerned about that, if you're sick and you feel like your detoxing isn't very effective, but as you build your health, your body will be able to kick out mercury and these kinds of things much more effectively, because the cycles in the body that we detox with are much more effective. And this is stuff that Dr. Kruse really gets deep into in his blog and website, if you want to check that out. So this is sort of the key. But then after you're doing these things and then using cold exposure, again, to me, cold is the best to build a solar callus. I found that when I first did this, the springtime, now 4 years ago almost, when I was living in Bosnia, I would go in the freezing river, about 15 Celsius, 60 degrees Fahrenheit, stay in as long as I could, or as long as it felt good, and then get out, and then I could lay in the sun, and I couldn't really burn because I was cooling my skin so that it could absorb more UV light. So that, to me, is the best hack for building a solar callus. But at the end of the day, you know, you just build up with a little bit one day. Even if you get a little tiny bit burnt, just don't fry yourself. Just maybe a tiny bit. By the way, getting pink and getting red doesn't mean you got burnt. It's only if it actually really sticks that you're, let's say, burnt. What happens when we go in the sun, we have this mechanism, which again goes to show how critical sun is for us, where UV light hitting our skin releases a chemical called nitric oxide from our blood vessels, and it causes the blood vessels to actually expand and even come up to the surface so that we can absorb more light in these porphyrins on the red blood cells, that so that the sunlight can charge the blood and can carry the sun to our mitochondria wirelessly, basically. So if we're pink and red, that's good because it means that our blood's coming to the surface to get the light. So people look at me as a white guy and they're like, you're pink, you're red. It's like, that's supposed to happen. That's not bad. But it's if you're burnt and hurting the next day, that's not optimal. So that's when you know, okay, maybe I take a break from the sun or I keep my face covered with a hat or whatever. That's really how you build a solar callus. Again, I would look up, for anyone who's curious about that, I'm dropping lots of bombs of really good information to follow up on. So this, you should have good show notes this episode for sure. People should check out Dr. Alexander Wunsch's. It's in my Instagram link tree, this video. It's called Why the Sun is Necessary for Optimal Health by this guy, one of the leading sunlight researchers in the world who I was just with in Germany at a talk actually, named Alexander Wunsch. And he basically describes in this video how when UV light hits our top level of our skin, it kills the top cells, which isn't bad. It's designed to happen. They're called the, not the melanocytes, but the keratinocytes. And basically the keratinocyte cells at the top level, I believe I'm not botching the name. I think that's the correct name. They die and then their DNA becomes used as a shield. DNA, because it communicates, or I should say DNA, another fun fact about how light is not causing cancer. Turns out that the light that our cells use to signal division is ultraviolet light. So if UV light causes cancer, think about this for a second. The research has clearly shown, and again, people should check this out in another book called Light and Shaping Life, Biophotons and Biology and Medicine. But it was definitively proven in several studies across decades that the signal for cells to divide, the signal that they use, is weak pulses of ultraviolet light. Hmm. So if ultraviolet light causes cancer, then why do our cells use it for communication? Like, would that make any sense at all? That the light that our cells use for communication causes cancer. It's kind of like saying that oxygen causes cancer. And there are probably people who would make that claim, that excess oxygen causes cancer. For sure, cancer is, in cancerous states, there is a relationship to oxygen because the mitochondria are broken. So they're consuming, I believe, a lot more oxygen. But that doesn't mean that oxygen causes cancer. If the mitochondria are consuming more oxygen in the cancerous state, it doesn't mean oxygen caused the cancer. It just means that they're consuming a lot more. So that's basically the deal. These top level skin cells, they die and they spread their DNA and it's literally sunscreen. So literally you just need to slowly build up your exposure. How did the guys in the Swiss Alps do it? The heliotherapists from back in the early 1900s, there was a particularly famous guy named Auguste Rollier in Switzerland in a town called Leysin at the high altitude. He knew they went to Switzerland because they knew that the less atmosphere, in other words, the more UV light they could get, the better their patients' outcomes would be. Think about that. Like, they cured everything from tuberculosis, wounds, depression, rickets in children who had deformed bones with UV light. And they knew that people got better with UV light. And what they would do is they would do 5 minutes on the feet, and then that was it for someone who's the whitest of the white. And so you can do this if you're the whitest, sickest of the white. But you really, I don't think you need to do it this slowly. 5 minutes on the feet, done for the day. Because they were on beds and they would roll them out onto like a balcony. Then they would do five minutes on the feet and the lower half of the legs, and then also 5 minutes on the feet. So basically now the feet are getting 10 minutes and the lower legs getting 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Then they would slide them out a little more. So the upper part of the leg would get 5 minutes, then the lower part of the leg would get 10 minutes along with the feet. And the feet in the end altogether would be getting 15 and so on. And the next portion of the body was the lower half of the torso, then the upper half of the torso with the arms, and then the head and the face and everything. So it was like by the end, the feet were getting 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 minutes on the feet. and the head was just getting 5 minutes. And just that in a couple of days was enough to basically build up a solar callus. So that's the most careful way you could possibly
do it. You brought up the atmosphere thing, but this is what we hear in Australia. There's something going on with the atmosphere there. It's been, you know, there's some problems with that. And they say that it's causing a lot more cancer in people there. I think it's skin cancer that's increased significantly in Australia. What is your take on that then?
My take would be that because it is an unnatural ozone hole because of human, you know, it isn't like even in the mountains in Switzerland, there's still like a normal amount of atmosphere. I mean, it's thinner air, but it isn't completely gone. Whereas if it is really as bad as they're saying in Australia, then it is possible that there is more of certain frequencies coming through that are harmful. But I would bet that it's actually better to get the sun, that like they have an ability to get more of the frequencies that our body can actually take advantage of, again, in moderation. The reason though is that if you, for example, you're in the sun, but you wear sunglasses or you wear sun cream, that's how you get skin cancer, because sun creams are full of toxic chemicals that become easily oxidized. So you're literally if I had to have like one prescription for how to get skin cancer, I would say spend all day in strong Australian sun with sunglasses and sunscreen on. And that's what they all do. So that's exactly why they're getting skin cancer, because they're following my skin cancer prescription by literally by spending all the time you possibly can in the sun without letting the light hit the eyes so that the rest of the body can calibrate. And by slathering on this toxic blocker that doesn't allow you to get the full spectrum of light, it's completely unbalanced. And it's full of these chemicals, again, that have been proven over and over and over again to become highly oxidized and basically create all these inflammatory free radicals and whatnot that disrupt cell cycles and all this stuff. It is a racket. It is a huge racket. Slip, slap, slop is their motto for slip, slap, slop, like with the sunscreen.
Slip, slap, your sunscreen. Get rid of that. It's terrible. Crazy. Okay, then
what does slip, slap, slop stand for? I'm going to look it up.
I want to transition just a little bit into how... So if we start to follow the sunlight or the light diet and your protocols, how does this help someone lose weight? What are the specific mechanisms? Like someone here who's struggling to lose weight, they're starting to eat healthy and they're still not seeing results. You know, I say look into other areas. You need to improve other areas of lifestyle, like your stress and getting more sunlight and moving more and doing things that are like humans should be doing. Talk about the actual mechanisms in which sunlight can help you either accelerate weight loss or whatever it may do.
Yes, this is a great question. So think about it this way. First of all, just so people know, the Australian motto, it's slip, slop, slap, which means slip on a shirt, slop on 50 plus sunscreen, terrible idea, and slip on a hat. Anyway, So there's a really interesting picture that I'd like to show you. See if I can get it. Actually, I'm not going to bother right now. I don't want to disrupt.
You're going to have to explain it because a lot of people will be listening audio.
Basically, people who are more connected to sunlight, when we're in the sunlight with the infrared frequencies and the red frequencies, we can actually make ATP without having to eat. So one mechanism is that when we're in the sun.
ATP is energy, by the way.
Yes, it's just an energy molecule that we make from our food to basically activate our proteins so that they can bind to this water network that contains energy and stuff, and they carry out all kinds of cool functions
ATP
in our body.
Energy? For those who are like, what?
Good way to put it. Yeah. Yes, it's like it's kind of what we turn our food into. It's like the substrate thing that we use to turn our food energy into useful energy in our body. Great, thank you, Kyle. So basically... when we get sunlight, we make a lot of ATP, this useful form of energy in our body, without having to eat any food. So how could sunlight help someone lose weight? Well, you don't keep eating as much food. You just get a lot more light. This is not just the morning sun exposure, but also the midday sun exposure. You charge up your battery. You'll find over time, if you're underweight, like I was, you'll actually probably find as your hormones rebalance, if you're following the light diet properly, and again, you have to be following it every step, otherwise, it's really not going to work, particularly the sunrise and the absorbing more sun and the water and the seafood and the avoiding blue light at night and avoiding EMF. You have to follow all of it. And if you do all those things and your social life and is complete, like terrible, and you don't have any connection and you don't have any love in your life and you don't have any passion of anything you're doing, then you'll still be miserable. That's why you have to follow even step 7 of cultivating your own inner light. Like, you'll still probably very likely be miserable if you follow the whole thing, but you haven't gotten to comfort with what you're doing, you know, and work that. I know a guy who's a hermit practically on the beach in Mexico who follows Dr. Cruz's protocols, AKA the light diet, but he's like 60. He had terrible fibromyalgia and he fixed it after having, he lived in Florida, for example, lots of sun in Tampa, Florida, floating in the ocean every day, many hours a day in strong UV light in Florida. And his fibromyalgia was only like, his pain, chronic pain was reduced when he was in the water, but when he got out, it was bad again. So he's like 5 to 8 hours every day in the water in Florida. He moved to Mexico with the strong magnetic field strength from the crater there and stronger UV light and less EMF from the Florida world and the US and the Western world. And his fibromyalgia went away in 5 days, almost completely, from just spending the days floating, literally. So that's, he's the best testament to the power of that region of Mexico where Dr. Cruz recommends people go. But again, even Bali, if you're in the ocean a lot, it's still great being somewhere with strong UV light, especially being in the water. So the reason I bring him up is because he's at terms with what he's doing with his life. So he, you know, he doesn't need to have a strong community. He's kind of on his own and he's cool with that. But, you know, it just depends what you want. Anyhow, though. So when we're getting more light, basically, like I said, we're getting more free energy, so we don't need to eat as much. And that's going to basically reduce weight gain. Again, back to the circadian rhythm piece in the morning. If you're like me, you're underweight, you'll eat more probably. Like, there's people who are really skinny and want to put on more weight, but their mitochondria are dysfunctional. They're burning through their food too fast, or they don't have any appetite. Like, actually, my brother has this issue. He's very skinny, and I, you know, when he's ready, I share with him the information, but otherwise, he's not really interested in applying it. But if he were to basically just follow the light diet, he would probably thicken up. Now, here's a really interesting thing. So I will share with you something very interesting about this. So I'm going to read actually all the 10 steps that this guy outlines of the benefits of UV light in his book. But basically, number 6, I'll just skip ahead to this one because it's relevant to what we're saying. UV light assists in weight loss. Farm animals living outdoors don't fatten as easily as those living indoors, which is a study from July, it's outlined in a book from July 1986, pages 30. You don't need to know this stuff right now. But anyway, the book, for anyone who's curious where that comes from, is called Let the Sunshine In by a guy named Lohmeyer, L-O-H-M-E-I-E-R. Basically, this is a summary of that. Farm animals living outdoors do not fatten easily as those living indoors. And there's a citation here. This has also been confirmed in studies in which animals exposed to UV light lose weight. This effect is thought to be caused, not necessarily for sure, but thought to be caused by the fact that UV light stimulates the thyroid gland, which increases metabolism and thus burns calories. In the 1930s, Swiss sun therapists found that their clients had very well-developed muscles and very little fat, even though they had not exercised for months. Similar conclusions are mentioned by Dr. Zane Keim in his book, Sunlight. So this answered, when I read this, it answered my question, like, how did I get so, I'd say, I'm not jacked by any standards, well, maybe by some standards, but I'm fairly fit and toned and I almost never work out and I'll surf like with some level of regularity when I'm in a surfable area, which hasn't been for the last 3 months. I haven't lost much muscle toneness though, maybe a little bit. But the point is that we're designed to be like fit and looking good, even if we're not working out. And then if you add that, you go even further and maybe physically look even better. Not that that's what we want, because when you carry more muscle mass in the modern world, that's actually more mitochondrial energy directed towards our muscles. And that's basically diverted from what could be in our brain and our heart. So this is why just putting, you know, for example, if you're lifting weights all day long, that energy is basically being, it is tissue that our body has to use energy to support, that if we didn't have it, the body could be directing that energy to the brain and the heart, which is where it's preferred to go. In other words, we're more like an ape with big fat monkey arms than a human with the optimized brain. Humans are designed to survive with our brain and our heart, our, you know, cognitive function, our intuition, and that kind of thing, and longevity, from our brain and our heart. This is why as humans age, there's this thing called the obesity paradox. Just for people to know also, because this is relevant to weight gain, there's actually a paradox, they call it, where people age and actually put on weight as they age, but they still live really well. Like, for example, there's a guy, a researcher named Dr. Neil Barzilai, who researches super centenarians in Brooklyn. And he's found that pretty much all of these people over 100 years old, which again, for me, the goal would be to live healthily over 100 years old, not to look like Adonis in the process, right? And the thing is, almost all of these people who live, like, think about it. Can you think of anyone who's over 80 years old or 90 years old who doesn't have a little bit of extra weight on them? There probably are some people, and they're really the exceptions, and they're super, super healthy. But most people put on actually some weight, and I couldn't fully explain why, but it's some sort of protective mechanism that our body's doing where it's sort of sacrificing our external facade, which, you know, when you're that old, presumably in evolution, you'd have a community that's going to protect you. So you don't need all that muscle mass, and you're really conserving your energy and your brain and your heart for those last critical years of your life. Whereas if you just pump up the muscles, you're really draining it out. So it's just a risk note. And even bodybuilders, I did a podcast with bodybuilders. They know that it's not the healthiest thing to be doing that. Like, it's not good for health to be ripped and so on. It just, if they want to do it with their life, that's a choice. Anyhow, so that's sort of the deal regarding UV light assisting in weight loss. It causes you to eat. One, it helps you to eat less, the red and infrared frequencies. UV frequencies can, again, upregulate our metabolism, causing us to burn more through what we're doing. And the third effect I would mention, and there's among others, is the resetting of our circadian rhythm, and particularly our leptin hormone, which is what I mentioned earlier with Dr. Cruz's leptin reset. Leptin is basically, it's a hunger hormone. And so when we are exposed to blue light at night and never getting sun during the day, but particularly blue light at night, what, again, Dr. Cruz has really nicely outlined on his blog in the leptin series is that leptin is designed to enter the hypothalamus in the evening after we've slept for a certain number of hours and basically tell our hypothalamus, which is this energy director center in our brain, basically saying, hey, by the way, leptin's created by our fat stores, because I didn't mention that. So our fat, depending on how much we have, creates a certain amount of leptin. It's supposed to go to the brain and say, okay, we have too little fat, so we need to be like hungrier, getting more food. Or we have too much fat, so we can take it easy. The issue is that the modern way we're living has destroyed the ability of the hypothalamus in the brain to comprehend the signal coming from leptin. So it's basically constantly saying, like, we have tons of food. We're good. But the brain isn't registering the signal that's saying we're good. So the brain's constantly thinking, I need to eat more. So that's ultimately the key thing, is fixing our leptin hormone functioning, which is basically all fixed by all the steps of the light diet. Again, circadian rhythm, more sunlight, all the things to get more sunlight and avoiding blue light at night, then we're totally good. And, yeah. Another cool example is it's actually been shown that taking cold baths, because it causes fat cells to get really active, it actually releases, if I'm not mistaken, it actually increases the leptin levels in our blood, in our body. And for, at least for me, I find that after a cold bath, I have no appetite. Like, literally, even no matter how hungry I thought I was, if I take like a proper ice bath, my appetite usually diminishes, at least for the period after that, you know, maybe a couple hours. So That's probably the good, yeah. Does that kind of answer your question?
It does. It's perfect. One other question. Cool. I have no idea if you know anything about this. I can't remember where I read this. Everyone's always looking for how to get rid of stretch marks. And I had read something about sunlight helping with stretch marks. Have you seen anything on that?
I haven't, but I would not be surprised at all. Cause like, I have scars and stuff, or at least I've had scars, and they just like disappear. I'm like, where did that scar go?
I was thinking, because when your skin is getting pink, you said all the blood's going up there, that's gotta be doing some sort of healing process for the skin as well. You would assume.
Well, the skin will just heal. I mean, again, like, our bodies are amazing. Like,
they're meant to heal.
Like, for example, this is a great question to actually ask people. It's like, if you cut yourself, like, what causes that cut to heal? Think about it. Like, do you like say heal, heal, heal? Like, no, it just happens. You know what I mean? If you're a Qigong master, apparently they can like direct their Qi and have that heal in like seconds. Again, that some people will think that's total woo-woo. I'm open-minded to it based on what I've learned of the power of our mind. Because if you learn how to use your mind to channel the electricity in your body, like the amount of electricity in our inner mitochondrial membrane is 30 million volts. That's like the, because it's such a small space, it's relative to the space, which is what, you know, makes up the voltage. It is a very high voltage, 30 million. It's the same amount of a bolt of lightning, essentially, that's in our inner mitochondrial membrane. So if you learn, we have literally tens or hundreds of trillions, actually probably whatever's beyond trillions, like quintillions of these mitochondria in our cells, about 1,000 for all of our 100 trillion cells. So it's like 10 quintillion is an approximation. If you can learn how to channel that, and like, you could probably do a lot. And again, I've seen Qigong masters, one who was actually from Indonesia, like videos, people can look this up. Again, this is not necessarily confirmed. This is maybe more on the less scientific side of things, but I'm open-minded to it because of what I've learned. This Qigong master could light newspaper on fire with his hands, literally like directing his Qi, sending. And here's the crazy thing though, is I know from my experiences with Qigong that you can feel your Qi at your fingertips if you're practicing it. And the research, this book that I mentioned earlier that showed that our cells communicate with ultraviolet light and signal for mitosis and cell division and so on. What he also discussed was that the point of our body that emits the most biophotons are our fingertips. So it's really interesting. And our lips. So think about why people kiss and why people hold hands, because then you're literally connecting with someone else's bioenergetic field and sampling their photons and the light and the energy in their body. And so these Qigong masters being able to channel their energy through their fingertips and touch people's backs and do this healing, and these people would literally be like they're being electrocuted when they're being touched. I don't think that's that far off. So it's super interesting. I mean, again, it's easy for people in the Western world to say this is woo-woo, but there have been tons of accounts of Qigong masters who could literally push someone, like just touch them and throw them across a room just by lightly touching them. I know people personally who have experienced this, and I trust them implicitly. So, you know, it's pretty interesting.
Crazy stuff.
So the point is you can heal anything if you – again, this is getting more next level, but like if you optimize the light diet, which is sort of just like just getting back to a base level of where we can be, if you throw some like really powerful Qigong practices, again, you'd have to find someone who's really good or some kind of meditation or some kind of something like this. I think that's really where the magic is. That's the next step beyond the light diet.
I like to be really realistic and actionable in my podcast and with the people that I work with. I mean, I coach one-on-one, I coach with people. So it's like, okay, what can I do now? How can I actually improve this? And one of the things I think about when I hear, I mean, I'm all in, I love what you're teaching and I think it makes all the sense in the world, but we live in this world in 2019 where we're basically doing all the opposites of everything you're saying that we have to do to fix ourselves. So you're saying that you have to do all of it in order to get any benefit, or can we like, how do you recommend someone get started
on benefit from any of them? Okay. Each step alone will provide lots of benefit. Yes.
Okay.
It's just for me to be able to guarantee any results, all of it, I would say. But, I want to read through these benefits of UV light briefly.
Yeah.
That he actually outlines in this book again, because just to dispel further the myth that it's actually so bad for us. One is obvious. UV light activates the synthesis of vitamin D, which is a prerequisite for the absorption of calcium and other minerals from the diet. And this is 1991, this book. They didn't even know necessarily about the effects of vitamin D on activating the immune system and all that kind of stuff. So Robert Neer and associates conducted a study on a group of elderly veterans to determine if extra sunlight would increase their ability to absorb calcium from their diets. All of the men received approximately 200 IU per day of vitamin D in their diets. And this is even dietary vitamin D, which is way suboptimal compared to sunlight. Oh, wait, no, let's see. One of these group men lived in an environment with full spectrum lighting, which contains UV, while the other group's living quarters had ordinary indoor lighting, which contains no UV. The group that received no UV had a 25% decrease in calcium absorption, while the group receiving UV had a 15% increase. In other words, the group receiving UV absorbed 40% more calcium from their diet than their counterparts who received no ultraviolet exposure, even though, oh, this is the kicker. This is why they did the oral vitamin D, because they all received 200 IU, but there was a 40% difference in the calcium absorption. So anytime anyone tells you that you can supplement vitamin D, they're wrong. Two, UV light lowers blood pressure, and this is by the action of nitric oxide. Because think about it, if you expand the vessels, blood pressure goes down because the channel is wider for it to pass through, so the heart doesn't have to pump as hard. It was first noticed in the early 1900s that UV radiation from the sun lowers blood pressure in both normal individuals and those with elevated blood pressure. In fact, in one study, people exposed to just one treatment of ultraviolet light, not sure of the duration, but I'm going to guess maybe 22 minutes to an hour, found they noticed a dramatic lowering of their elevated blood pressures. They found that the effects lasted from 5 to 6 days from that one treatment. So think about how we're designed to be every day in the sun. We should probably have really low blood pressures constantly, right? Shouldn't even be a question. It's almost like probably the standard blood pressure is way higher than what we're supposed to have. Because of, same with male sperm count. Male sperm count is like the numbers have been reduced and reduced and reduced. There's a good Vimeo documentary called The Disappearing Male, and they claim it's all about BPA and these chemicals. I don't think that's true. I think it's more to do with this, but the statistics are solid that the man, that like what used to be considered the borderline for being infertile as a man, pretty much everyone today is below that boundary, like relatively
speaking. It's like our numbers, like the daily amounts we're supposed to have for vitamins and minerals are also extremely high compared to what we actually are supposed to have if we just ate a healthy diet and likely followed the light diet as well. A lot of people that are on the carnivore diet that need like way less vitamins and minerals because they can actually absorb it and use it more efficiently than when you're eating processed and shitty food, and more than likely having to do with light as well.
So and along with blood pressure and the body working better, UV light increases the efficiency of the heart. 18 people of 20 tested, cardiac output increased 39%. These are exposing 20 people to ultraviolet light. In other words, their hearts became stronger and pumped more blood. Also, UV light improves electrocardiogram readings and blood profiles of individuals with atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, which pretty much most adults over the age of 50 have today to some level. 169 Russian patients with cerebral atherosclerosis received treatments with UV light. A one-year follow-up indicated that all patients had an improvement in cerebral circulation, were back at work, and reported feeling better. Another one, UV light reduces cholesterol. This is really interesting because it relates to the hormone production, which UV light catalyzes. In one experiment, patients with hypertension and related circulatory problems were exposed to UV light. 2 hours after the first exposure, 97% of the patients had almost a 13% decrease in serum cholesterol. Within this group, 86% maintained this level 24 hours later. It should also be noted that other types of fats implicated in heart disease are also reduced by exposure to UV radiation. This probably occurs because the body requires UV light to help break down cholesterol. One of the most interesting things I've learned from this book is that every food, every molecule that's an organic molecule from nature is just by virtue of existing and being part of the solar life cycle has certain frequencies that it specifically absorbs and re-emits, so more than others. So what that means is when we have certain foods, molecules, vitamins, anything in our bloodstream, they are all, even inorganic things like vitamins, they all react and are, let's say, they interreact with certain frequencies from the sun. In other words, if you have cholesterol in your bloodstream, if we have cholesterol in our bloodstream, which we do anytime we're eating eggs or anything good like that, which is really healthy, cholesterol is designed to be broken down by UV light. So if we're not getting UV light, we're going to have higher levels of cholesterol and we're going to have lower levels of all the hormones that need to be made from cholesterol because we don't have the light that's supposed to break it apart. Like the energy to break cholesterol apart and to turn it all, like the things that make up the building blocks of our brain, the hormones that cholesterol makes, namely DHEA, pregnenolone, which becomes testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone so we can make babies and be healthy. We need UV light to break down the cholesterol that's in our bloodstream in order to make any of those. So like imagine how messed up someone would be, which I'm saying we're all pretty messed up if we don't get any sun. Like that's pretty rough. So 6, we talked about UV light assimilates weight loss. 7, UV light's an effective treatment for psoriasis. 80% of those suffering from the skin disease improve when they're exposed to UV light. That was 7. 8, UV light is an effective treatment for many other diseases. Well, there's 165 diseases they say that have been treated by UV light. Yeah, we're not going to do that. So UV light increases level of sex hormones. So they might not even have put 2 and 2 together that the cholesterol, but literally increase male hormone levels by 120%. Also increases the levels of female hormones. So pretty interesting. And then it activates important skin hormones. So that's basically the deal. So that's some of the benefits of UV light. When people are saying it's the worst thing ever, it actually turns out it's like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, the best thing ever. So it doesn't
matter. There's only one thing.
It doesn't matter what your health problem is. It doesn't matter what your issue is. More sunlight is going to help you.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Be careful. And I'm not a medical doctor, and none of this is medical advice. Please consult your physician before, applying anything. But
so when you say that, now you're saying this is all bullshit. And
No. I just have to make the disclaimer.
Awesome.
People can make it how they want. Like, so, man, I think we've gone through a lot. What do we want to run on to next? How do you want to hit this out?
Well, I want to close it out because I think we're getting long here. But I want to ask first of all. You do a ton of teaching on Instagram. Your stories are awesome. He literally just sits there every day. I don't know if you're watching the sun while you do it, but it just like goes off on tangents and rants about why sun is good and other ways to get more sun. So what is your Instagram, first of all?
Yeah, The Light Diet.
The Light Diet, that's easy. I'll put that in the show notes so you can check that out.
And Twitter, The Light Diet on Twitter. I'm just starting
to use Twitter. Oh, you're on Twitter too.
Yeah, I haven't really started, but it's so fun to just anytime I read something cool or see something cool. Like yesterday, I was reading a book by Julius Caesar because I love, for me, just so people know about me, classics, Greek history, Roman history, the past, that excites me. Like, wow, people did this. Julius Caesar conquered all of the known world. Like, if I want to learn from anyone, it's Julius Caesar. Yes, he wasn't like all perfect. Neither was anyone ever, but he was cooler than most people. Anyway, he wrote a book about his conquering of the Gallic peoples all throughout what is now France, Germany, Switzerland, Austria, and so on, and Northern Italy. And in it, when he was just in the first chapter I was reading yesterday, he's describing the boundaries of the different nations. And of course, he's using the mountains, or the rivers, the things that naturally would divide peoples. But then when he says to the north and to the east and to the west, he never says to the north, to the east, to the west. He says to the North Star, to the Big Dipper, to the rising and to the setting sun. Just think about that for a minute. Like before people used the cardinal directions, they were more associated with the rising and setting sun. So for anyone, it's not that hard if you really think about it, but for anyone who feels like this is some crazy idea that the sun is something of any relevance to us, like consider where we live. It's called the solar system, meaning the sun system. And the reason our earth spins and the reason it's even inhabitable is because of the sun. The reason we exist, the reason anything on earth exists is because of the sun. Like the sun is literally the giver of life. And the fact that we've come to a society where like we think that the sun is bad is like, it's quite literally like the greatest comedy ever. It is like hilarious. Like if you were an alien, you would be dying at us.
I just watched, speaking of aliens and the sun, there's a series on Netflix called One Strange Rock. It's narrated by Will Smith. It's a kick-ass show. I think there's like 10 episodes, but it talks about, it's kind of like Planet Earth, but from space / how life exists and why we're all here. And there's a couple episodes where they talk about sunlight and how important it is for why we even exist and why we're here in this world. It's really, really cool. They go super in depth. They talk about mitochondria, a lot of the stuff that we just talked in here, but in a very simple form. So if you're kind of like, what the heck was this guy?
Really? That's fascinating.
It's cool. Yeah. I was like, I was just watching this past week and I was like, oh shit, I learned that from Matt. So yeah, if you guys want something that's like easy to watch and learn from, check that out on Netflix. Make sure you're wearing blue light blocking glasses though if you're going to watch it in the evening, which you can pick up at, is it rawoptics.com?
Yes, Ra Optics, R-A. That's Ra, the god of the sun, the ancient Egyptian god of sun, who happened by coincidence maybe, or maybe not coincidence, to be the god of healing and medicine as well.
Ooh, there you go.
You could believe that. The god of the sun was the god of medicine and healing.
rawoptics.com. I think you can use a code. I don't even know what the code is, but I think it's Kyle 10.
I think 10. It's called Simple.
No, I switched it. I think it's Kyle 10 or Kyle 15, 10. Whatever the discount is. Anyway, just look in the show notes. I'll put it in there, but I think it's Kyle 10. And you can get 10% off. There's some sweet glasses. What I wear every night too. Blocks the blue light so that you can get to sleep a lot quicker. It's actually crazy how much it's worked. And I wear an Oura Ring, which tracks, and I can see a huge difference when I wear these glasses. So make sure to check those out. Yeah, I love
Big
it.
Win.
Matt, is there anything, I mean, I'm going to bring you back on. I think we should do this like every couple months because you're always learning.
Yeah, let's do it, dude. I'm always in because I'm learning new stuff too. It's so much fun, you know?
I want to keep
like a bi-monthly.
Exactly. But is there anything that's in your mind that we didn't talk about here that you're like, okay, shit, I got to tell these people, these listeners, or did we cover most of it?
Well, you asked for like at the end, probably just a couple actionable tips. I mean, I already gave the whole light diet, you know, keeping it really actionable. But I'd say the first and most important thing would be to learn, because like if you're not already sold or you don't quite get it, then I'd say just look up my name, look up the old podcast I did with Kyle, look up Matt Maruca podcasts, and you'll find a bunch on YouTube, on iTunes, Spotify, whatever your preferred platform is for listening to podcasts. And it's MattMaruca. And then you can listen to more. I recommend people, if you like reading books, read this book, Light, Medicine of the Future. There's a book called Health and Light you can read that's also kind of like it. I would read Light, Medicine of the Future first. You know, just learn more. Follow up on these things, because then you're going to be more driven and understand why you're doing it. You're more likely to stick with it. So that would be like the really good takeaway. But if you're really just sold and you just want to know what you need to do, if you have health problems and you're sick or you have real issues or you're depressed, where your life feels like it's miserable, then I would consider really reevaluating and making a big shift, whether it's quitting your job and trying to figure something out. I think everyone would benefit from reading a book called The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, and considering how you can use the internet to create like what Kyle and I have created for ourselves, sort of some remote working situation, whether it's for your existing company where you get that freedom by building up trust with your boss or superiors, or by starting your own little side thing, which you could eventually grow. I seriously think that the market for light diet coaches, which again, we'll have a certification program probably not far down the road. Maybe Kyle and I will work on it together and like, you know, do something like that. But there's so many health coaches making so much money teaching people impartial, out of date information. So like thousands, if not millions of people probably around the world who are just making a living being coaches. So if you could be like one of the maybe 5 to 10 in the whole world who are light diet coaches actually bringing out this most advanced information, there's a career right there for anyone. So it's like, it's not like you can't do it. It's just, you don't want to do it. That's a different thing. But sometimes you need to make big moves. If you're in a place with winter, you've been sun deprived your whole life, and you're still living through winters, you might need to go somewhere to really achieve your optimal health. In fact, you probably do. Everyone probably does. But would benefit the most from going somewhere where you could get more light during the winter, like snowbirding or just living in the tropics. So that's probably the most solid takeaways that I would recommend.
Come visit me here in Bali and just surf and be in the sun. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, dude, Kyle's told me he's thinking about launching like an in-person light diet retreat in Bali. He and I might do this together. So like, you know, it won't be cheap, but it'll be really worth it.
Yeah,
so
we'll absolutely. Comes out. All right, Matt, listen, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. I hope we cross paths sometime soon. I don't know if I'll be in Bosnia anytime soon, but I'm sure
we'll be in Costa Rica, bro.
Yeah, Costa Rica. That's close to where my home is anyway. But listen, always a pleasure. I love the information that you're teaching. So keep it up, keep sharing this stuff. And hopefully the listeners are buying in and realizing what you're saying is the future and where we need to go. So just keep preaching, buddy. I love it. And
challenge, guys. Yeah, listeners, challenge. The better challenges you can put up, the better I can learn and try to find, you know, more information. So I'm open to these challenges. But I used to believe what you believe. Trust me.
That's a wrap, folks. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, you could do me a wonderful favor by taking a screenshot and sharing it with your friends on social media. Feel free to tag me at healthsimple_ and let me know your thoughts. And if you have any questions, feel free to shoot me a DM as well. I would love to hear from you. I hope you guys all have a wonderful day.